Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. From the right, we have
DJ McGuire, a progressive conservative from Suffolk, Virginia.
And from the left of the aisle, we have
Greg Matuszak, a common sense liberal who has thought about taping the president on almost every day because 25th Amendment, why not? From Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm Rebecca Kushmeiner, a progressive feminist from Kensington, Maryland. I can't stop laughing at Greg.
It's my looks.
And I'm Kevin Kelton, a passionate moderate from Los Angeles, California. And today we are joined by Nassim Makia, who is from an organization called Outvote. Nassim, I'm going to let you introduce yourself and tell us what you do and what it means.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm Nassim Makia, the CEO of Outvote. And basically, we've built an app to get Democrats to go vote by having friends peer pressure each other and sort of shaming each other into not voting.
I love that.
Yeah, basically what it is you can do it on behalf of campaigns. You can just do it, you know, because you want to get your friends to vote. And what we do is we match your phone contacts to a national voter database of 260 million voters. We tell you which of your friends don't vote, have missed votes, you know, Republican, Democrat, basically their voting history and their party and all the kind of public records. And so you can kind of see for yourself, and then you can select them all and kind of message them and basically annoy them until they tell you that they will vote.
This app is extremely cool. I downloaded it a little while ago, and I've been playing with it all night. And, you know, I'm delighted with how far-reaching it is. It seems to have been linked up with a lot of good progressive organizations. You know, obviously, it syncs to all of my contacts, so I could, you know, if I wanted to, sync my, you know, friend's au pair who returned to Germany 3 years ago because I never update my contact list. But it's really cool because it does cross the country. Like, I'm seeing some candidates I really care about in Ohio, candidates I care about in Arizona. Now, do you have plans to continue expanding the map?
Yeah, definitely. So actually, a bunch of stuff is just about to launch over the next few weeks. So we basically think of ourselves as, you know, we're the tech and sort of all these great organizations that have done the hard work of organizing, you know, for the past decades, they're kind of the distribution. And so we're working with groups like Swing Left and Move On, you know, and Vote.org and a few others to really get this into the hands of as many people as possible. Basically, like, we know peer pressure works. We know your friend's behavior changes your behavior. The hard part is getting everyone to do it.
And it seems like this is going to be a great tool, like the day before the election. You know, you go into your local race, like I'm looking at the Ben Jealous for Governor campaign. And what I could do is go in and everybody I know in my state, I could text them and say, hey, don't forget tomorrow's election day, get out and vote for Ben Jealous. Or, you know, because you have pre-entered text and you can edit it in
That's
real
right.
time. So, you know, you can modify the message. And I love that. You're just that little bump to, because on Monday morning, nobody's thinking, hey, I've got to vote tomorrow. But by you text them Monday evening and Tuesday morning, it's on their mind.
Yeah, that's right. And I would say you can even go even earlier than that, because part of the power is trying to get folks to do it as well. So you want to remind your friends to vote, but your friends who are kind of like super Democrats and really, you know, jazzed about this kind of thing, you want to get them to do the same thing and get that kind of network effect going to reach as many people as possible.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, the domino effect.
Yeah, I have a question. So how did you get my mom? Like, is she on your payroll? Because no one does guilt like this. That's amazing.
Yeah, so we actually look, you know, we know there are nicknames in there and folks don't put in first and last always.
Yeah.
Sometimes they just put mom. So we're actually matching that to, like, you know, Yellow Pages and things like that. And so we're doing some extra work to make sure we get moms and dads and
no,
everyone.
But I'm like, so I see this. I'm like, oh, this is something my mom would think of. Like, oh, now it's not just peer pressure. It's guilt. It's wonderful.
I'm like, Greg is Catholic.
Oh, yeah, I'm super Catholic. This is like, oh, it's a wonderful idea. I really, really like this idea. And I'm like, oh, yes, mom, I will get a haircut. Yes, mom. I will go vote. Oh, for on someone like me, it's great.
Is this something you talked about? Some of the organizations you work with. Do you work with Democratic Party organizations themselves, or is it just folks outside of the Democratic Party?
No, we work with parties as well. So we're working with a few different state parties, Montana State Party, and a few others. And we work directly with the DNC as well.
Do you work with are you willing to work with local state parties, or is it just at the state level?
No, local state parties as well. Yeah, really any organization. So we've had, the political world is interesting to break into. It's all about relationships, and we're not particularly well networked in, but we're trying to get better and better. And so as folks hear about us, or as we get an introduction, we're just getting to as many campaigns as possible.
Well, after we do this lovely podcast, stay on the line. That's how old I am. Stay on the call. And I'll get you the contact information for the chairman of the Suffolk City Democratic Party down here. I'm on the exec comm because getting folks out to vote is a key thing here. So yeah, well, we can talk later.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say I'm going to flag your app for a couple of local, like, indivisible groups and do more good groups that are going to be working on Get Out the Vote here in Maryland.
Oh yeah, I'll put your name. I'll drop your name to the. I used to fool with the head of the Ohio Party.
Oh, amazing!
Yeah. I've worked a couple campaigns with him, but I have some great stories. They're super cool people. David Pepper's awesome. That's my name drop. I'm name dropping like crazy.
You had a better one before we started. Before we started, you're talking about George Clooney.
Yeah, now it's David Pepper. Clooney. Are you kidding? In the political realm, no one's cooler than David Pepper.
That is not true. When George Clooney's dad was running for Congress, the way he solicited donations, he told his friends that if they donated the max to his dad's congressional campaign, he would come wash their car.
So, Nassim, you actually already answered one of the questions that I was going to come in with. You said that you can choose for which of your contacts you want to connect with in terms of outvote. So, like, for somebody like Greg, who has tons of Republicans in his family,
oh my goodness,
he maybe doesn't want to send this to all of them because he doesn't want to turn out the Republican vote.
Yeah, but you can control for that. So there are filters. You can press Democrats or, filter out for – folks getting the snoozy, lazy face for not voting. So, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, I mean, basically what you do is you scroll through a list of campaigns, you pick one, and then it matches up with your contact list. And it's like, hey, these people might be interested in this campaign. And you can narrow it down even further. So, like, my friend who actually lives in Arizona, I text her about Kyrsten Sinema's race. My friend who has a PhD from the University of Arizona but lives down the street, not so much. So you can be a little bit selective.
Jeez, Nakim, I'm a little pissed off now because if you had invented this in 2015, we might have a President Clinton right now.
Well, actually, we started building it in the summer of 2016 and getting swept up in the races, but unfortunately wasn't launched in time.
And what is the link, excuse me, the URL again so people can find it? Because if you Google Outvote, there might be other types of organizations that come up that are not yours, and they're good organizations too, from what I understand. But to specifically find yours, what is the URL?
Yeah, it's just www.outvote.com.
Or you can go into the Apple App Store. That's where I found your app tonight. I just typed in Outvote in the search bar in the Apple App Store. I don't know about other platforms.
Yeah. You can also actually text VOTE to 202-868-8683.
So you got a 202, like, you got a DC exchange on that.
Yeah, we did.
Nice.
It's actually 202-868-VOTE is the number. And then you're texting VOTE to that number, which is kind of confusing. So I've just started saying the whole number.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, we're thrilled to have you here, and we will be plugging your app throughout the rest of the midterm campaign.
Thank you so much.
But now let's talk about politics and what's happening in the world.
Oh, yeah, that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
do
that.
We have to? Because that's
so kind of a slow week. I really don't know if there's anything to talk about.
Sure.
You're cute, Kevin.
Rod Rosenstein in the news. My man, Rod. He wants to invoke that 25th. What did you think about the way this came through the New York Times? They've used the same process that they've used many times to hit the Trump administration, which is anonymous sources. But in this case, it seems like that their anonymous sourcing may be a little questionable. What do you guys think?
Well, I think their anonymous sourcing needs a sarcasm font.
Yes.
You know, it's unclear what the tone was in Rosenstein's remarks. But you know,
NBC reported just interjecting. Sorry, NBC reported that it was sarcastic when he was talking about it. Go on. I'm sorry, Rebecca.
No, I mean, you know, one of the things I want to say about one of the things unsarcastically I would like to say about anonymous sources is just because they're anonymous to us, the reader, doesn't mean they're anonymous to editors and reporters. You know, you don't. I assume from what I know from journalists that they give different degrees of credibility to different callers. So, like, if you're Joe C-SPAN Washington Journal caller saying that the CIA is tapping your cat, that's not going to get a call back immediately. But if it's actually a person, someone from the Washington Bureau of a publication knows, that they will take it more seriously. So, you know, these sources are probably legit, but it seems like there's some nuance that was missing in the original story, and the New York Times is really going for some clicks here.
Well, yeah, I think that should have been my point. My greater point is they didn't capture the nuance of it. As DJ said, according to NBC's reporting, what Rod Rosenstein said in these meetings to Andrew McCabe, they were having an argument about Trump and how irresponsible he is. And Rosenstein said, "What do you want me to do, Andrew? Go into the Oval Office wearing a wiretap?" Which is clearly a sarcastic comment, not
right,
to be serious. What the New York Times said was, well, maybe that's how he said it in one meeting, but we have other sources who say that he followed up and mentioned it in different meetings. So it gets vague as
oh,
to
oh, yeah, because
he
nobody ever recycles a good joke.
Do you think that the New York Times source is actually a parrot that sits in the corner of the room that just repeats everything and says, and Trump is going, "Who is this source?" And this and the parrot goes, "Who is this source?" And,
well,
and the source goes, where wire, and is just sitting there through the whole thing, and Trump is scratching his head, going, "I don't know." And then after a while, they feed the parrot. They said, "What did he say?" So it's a parrot. I mean, it's that dumb. They are that dumb. That's my theory. But go on. I'll add some insight in just a moment.
Well, there's another theory. That's the parrot theory.
That's the parrot theory.
The other theory I've heard is that it could have been Andrew McCabe who was upset about the fact that he got fired unceremoniously and lost his pension. And he's, for some reason, getting back at Rosenstein for reasons that I'm not clear about. And Greg, you said before we came on the air that you heard of possibly a third potential conspiracy theory here.
You know we love the conspiracies, because we are the source of all your conspiracy theories once you stop shopping. But
we are actually wearing tinfoil hats right now as we record this.
I'm wearing a
really
wire.
Cute. Mine is so stylish.
I'm wearing a wire and talking to a parrot. But but I had read somewhere that Breitbart, I think, had said that this was actually put in by a deep Trump person. Like, they had called. They're the source. And they were like, "Look, we need a real reason to get rid of A-Rod, the real A-Rod. And this is how we're going to do it. We're going to leak that he said something just ridiculous. And now Trump is justified. Even the liberals, even I'm like, oh, he's got to go. You can't say stuff like that." So
that goes back to my question. Let's say, for argument's sake,
sure,
Rudy, just because everybody knows his name, let's say Rudy Giuliani tipped off the New York Times reporters about this meeting and what, you know, his version of what was said in there. Okay. And let's say that there is truth to the fact that the words "wear a wire" were mentioned in the meeting, but maybe not in the context that Giuliani phrased it to the reporters.
Sure.
Do the New York Times reporters have a responsibility to say, "Hey, we got this from the Trump side, so you have to weigh this in that context"? When you just say anonymous sources told us, you're doing their bidding.
Well, hang on. That is, as I, now, granted, I have not actually read the New York Times story.
All the news that's fit to ignore.
But they, when they talk, they don't use the term, they never use the term an anonymous source. They say sources close to the administration, senior White House, blah, blah, blah. It gives you an idea of where this information came from, and probably in terms of who it, not who particular, but an idea of what side they may or may not have been on. I'm just surprised that so many conservatives and Republicans suddenly had this newfound respect for the New York Times. It's like, oh, the New York Times says it. It must be true. You know, said no Republican ever. What the hell is going on here?
Okay, so also in the news, it looks like as of the time that we're taping this podcast, it looks like there will be a hearing on Thursday with both Professor Christine Blasey Ford and Judge Brett Kavanaugh testifying about their version of what did or didn't happen in the summer of 1982.
But by the time this actually hits the air and our listeners are listening, this has just hit. Drudge is saying Ronan Farrow has an account of a second accuser.
What?
I've been waiting for a second accuser.
Yes, actually, you did say that.
Seriously, I think I texted you guys Thursday or Friday. I'm like, this feels like the moment in the news cycle where we're going to have another accuser, probably somebody out of a workplace. So I'm going on record that I had that prediction of a second accuser. I didn't take screenshots. Maybe I should have.
Perhaps, but I am, for whatever reason, rather amused by the fact that this accusation also involves dildos.
What?
What?
Oh my god, that's like Clarence Thomas and the pubic hair on the Coke can. Ew.
This is just breaking as we're doing the podcast, but if the Drudge report accounts are correct, and there is going to be a second accuser whose story may hold up until Thursday, whose story may crumble before Thursday. We don't know what's going on, but we do know that Ronan Farrow has a pretty good record over the last several months of coming up with very credible depictions of sexual misconduct against very well-known men.
That is Ronan Farrow's bread and butter. That's his bag. John Lovett calls him the avenging angel of Me Too, but John Lovett's his boyfriend, so he might be exaggerating.
So what we're really seeing is this story does not stop developing ever. There is more twists and turns, and it just keeps on. It's a story that keeps on giving in the way that something just keeps on. And what amazes me is that after six FBI investigations into this man's life, there's more. I mean, obviously.
Well, of course, because the FBI, they're human beings, and they can only chase down leads when they know of the lead.
Yeah.
So I've seen that argument made on Facebook and Open Fire so many times this week. Well, there have already been six FBI investigations. Well, this should be number seven.
Right.
I am still not unconvinced that this might not be withdrawn. If there is a credible rumor, if the White House or the Senate leadership knows that there is actually another accusation in a pipeline, Brett Kavanaugh might give a tearful speech saying, I'm going to withdraw because this is being too hard on my family. I still think that's a possibility if there is an actual accusation.
I won't rule out anything at this point. I think it tells you where the center of gravity is in the Republican Party right now, because if Mitch McConnell had his way, he would probably want to keep that seat open on election day, use the lame duck for it, but keep the seat open on election day as a way to motivate Republican voters. Mitch McConnell knows mm-hmm. that if they ram Kavanaugh through, well, that was an unfortunate pun. But if Kavanaugh is confirmed before election day, then a large number of Republican voters will be less motivated to vote because that seat will be filled, while Democrats will still be mad as hell and crawl over broken glass to cast their votes. Mitch McConnell knows that. That was why Mitch McConnell held that seat, Supreme Court seat, open in 2016 to give Republicans a reason to vote despite Donald Trump. If Mitch McConnell had his way, he would do that again. He can't because he's not in charge of the Republican Party anymore. That's Donald Trump. Donald Trump sees himself in Kavanaugh, and Donald Trump is, you know, Donald Trump, Mr. That Really Was Not My Voice on the Access Hollywood tape, is now determined to get him through because he sees someone else accused, and in his mind is probably, hey, that's somebody else who did it. If I can get him on the court, that can make me look better.
Well, and there's also, don't forget, there's the fact that Kavanaugh has on a paper trail saying, I won't indict a sitting president.
There's that too.
Which is a bad reason to put him on the court, because that's only one case that he'll be deciding. And also, Trump just hates to lose. He doesn't like losing stuff.
The More Perfect Union podcast, now heard on iTunes and Stitcher and Rod Rosenstein wiretaps wherever they are. Now, let me ask you guys, have you heard about this story of someone who was working either in the Trump White House or the RNC who got his mistress pregnant and then slipped her an abortion, Mickey?
No, this is Jason Miller. You guys have all heard
Jason
about him
Miller,
too.
Yeah.
He was up for the communications director job until it turned out he had gotten AJ Delgado, another Trump campaign flunky, pregnant. And he's married. And his wife was also pregnant. He apparently cannot keep it in his pants. And so now he's engaged in a custody battle with Delgado for the baby that he conceived out of wedlock while also conceiving a baby in wedlock with someone entirely different. And she's alleging that one of the reasons he should not be granted the custody he wants is because in the past he had a relationship with a woman he met in Florida, a woman who is an exotic dancer by trade, got her pregnant and decided to handle it by mixing mifepristone in her smoothie without telling her. She ended up in the hospital hemorrhaging, lost the pregnancy, and nearly died. She was practically comatose from blood loss. All of this done without her consent. So this is really screwed up in a lot of ways.
Wasn't this an episode of The Bold and the Beautiful?
No, it sounds like an episode of SVU is what it is.
A reminder to all of our listeners, please be sure to knock on every mirror you see, and if you find the portal to the normal universe, please let the rest of us know. Yeah.
What a bizarre story.
Oh, I mean, that's the kind of thing really, truly horrible human beings do. Because apparently, when he gave her this medication, it was contraindicated potentially by other medications that were in her system. Whether they were legal or illegal, I do not know. But she had an extremely negative reaction to this. Normally, mifepristone is pretty harmless if you're taking it under doctor's supervision and the doctor's made sure that you don't have, freaking blood thinners in your system or something like that. So this woman was really harmed by what he allegedly did. You can't just do this. Meanwhile, this is the whole party that says that abortion is wrong under any circumstances, unless apparently it's your mistress from a campaign stop in Florida and you decide to just mix the meds in her smoothie without telling her.
If I may, I want to vent about that in particular, because I was a Republican for 25 years, and I'm starting to wonder if I was drunk the whole time. But when Republican politicians and Republican campaign aides and Republican party officials all talked about preborn life and how they wanted to save children, I was dumb enough to believe them. I thought they really meant it when they said they wanted to save children. But it seems that any attempt to actually save children beyond changing the law is completely foreign to them. And when you see a Jason Miller story, you just have to wonder, is it really about saving children to them, or is it just about ticking a political box, or is it all about control? I'm starting to wonder if the entire history of the pro-life movement, starting from around 1994, 1995, when they decided they needed to oppose campaign finance reform because it would hurt the more pro-life-ish party and the Republicans. I'm starting to wonder if they just from that point forward, the entire pro-life movement was thoroughly corrupted, leaving those of us who really are concerned about preborn life and really do want to save children just looking and wondering, what the fuck do we do now? Because these people are either idiots or we can't trust them at all. It's just painful for me to see. Or both.
It might be both.
And then in the category of weird news stories, there's the Arizona congressional race where a guy named Paul Gosar, who is running for re-election apparently in his district, has 6 of his 9 siblings coming out against him. 6 of his brothers and sisters actually cut commercials telling people not to vote for their brother Paul. How weird is that?
First, can we just, like, raise a glass to Paul Gosar's mom? Ten kids!
That's kids!
Freaking awesome!
God bless you, Mrs. Gosar.
Mrs.
We assume
Gosar,
that's your name.
You're the best!
Yeah, I think she's a fellow Catholic. I'm just going to throw that out.
She could be Mormon. You don't know.
Oh, good point. Good point.
I have to say, Gosar's response, where he basically essentially called his six siblings Stalinists. I mean,
said mom likes me best.
dear God, and I thought my Thanksgiving family dinner as a kid was a mess because one of my aunts called my grandmother's turkey too dry. This could be a bloodbath. Yeah. Oh my God!
I mean, seriously, we need Rod Rosen to seem to wear a wire to that.
Oh yeah,
that's what we all want to see. That's like the Big Brother house. Come on.
Oh yeah, I would pay tickets to watch that one. And we'd have to hide the knives, all the sharp. And they'd say, "Why are we using plastic forks this year?"
And I can't carve a turkey with a spoon.
Who locked the liquor cabinet? This is crazy. This must be the Stalinists. And oh my gosh, that'd be awesome.
Okay. Let's wrap up this week with what's up with Trump this week. We usually open with the president.
Trump.
This week we're going to close with him. He's the headliner of this show. So apparently the Trump administration is trying to change green card eligibility for people that use Medicaid, food stamps, or Section 8 housing. What's going on there?
Yeah, they've announced it's a potential rule change that was announced through DHS this week that you could potentially be denied a green card if you have been utilizing, legally, I might add, any sort of government assistance. And government assistance is available to, you know, people without green cards in some cases, or parents who don't have green cards but children who are U.S. citizens. For example, they might be getting Medicaid, they might be getting food stamps. And it's just going to make it that much harder to become a citizen or that much harder to feed your family and have a roof over your head. It's a way of screwing poor people and immigrants all in one fell swoop, and it doesn't serve a good policy purpose. It's not going to be a major cost savings. It's not going to deter immigration. All it seems to me to be doing is pandering to Trump's anti-immigrant base.
Right.
Well, let me play devil's advocate. Why want to create a cost savings if it's going to cut down on people using Medicaid, food stamps, and Section 8 housing?
Because it's going to increase the number of people who have to regulate all of that shit. And that's what the Republican Party has become. At one point, they were the party of smaller government, of lesser government. Now they're just the party of big government to regulate the shit out of the poor. That's really all they're talking about now. Regulating the poor, regulating immigrants, regulating people who are not white rural voters. No, they get bailouts and subsidies from when Trump does his idiotic things like his new tariffs on communist China.
We'll get to that.
When did DJ become Noam Chomsky?
You know,
best line of the podcast.
I have the anger of a conservative scorned, because again, for me, limiting government size, scope, and cost, that still means something to me, but it doesn't mean anything to any of them. To them, it's about using big government for their own objectives rather than actually cutting it down to size. And this is just another example of that. It won't save money, because anything that might be saved from reduction in spending for those programs will end up going to hiring all these new regulators and these new enforcers.
No, it's going to go to putting up tent cities for unaccompanied minors in Arizona or something.
No, Rebecca, AIDS funding is being redistributed.
Oh, AIDS funding is being used for that. God, right. That's so sane and normal. I'm delighted. No, I mean, the reason it's not going to be a cost savings, Kevin, is because it doesn't actually cost us that much. The cost of Section 8 vouchers, the cost of Medicaid is not that expensive. It doesn't cost that much to house and feed people.
You're right, but go convince voters in the Midwest and in the South that it's not going to save money.
Well, I'm going to use outvote and text them.
When they hear denying immigrants Medicaid and food stamps, they hear, oh my gosh, yes, these people are spending my tax dollars. They're here illegally. Anything that stops that, I'm for it.
Because they can't do math.
The math. I know. We're on the same side there.
You know, and we're back again to Betsy DeVos and public education. If people could do math, and if people learn civics, they would understand that Section 8 vouchers are not that expensive in the grand scheme of things. They certainly cost less than the military, and we should be paying military personnel more and military, you know, contractors who make shit less.
Hey, whoa, hang on a second. I'm not with you on this thing on military contractors. No.
They deserve every penny.
That's right.
They are the hardest working Americans.
Okay, every military contractor except DJ gets a pay cut.
That's right.
But enlisted military personnel get a pay raise, so they don't need the food stamps.
Now that we've gotten it down to how much DJ is making on a weekly basis. Trump also this week tried to order a massive declassification of some FISA documents that I guess would show some bad faith by the FBI. I don't even know what it is.
I thought it was Bruce Orr's text.
And the best part about that is, Kevin, neither does Trump. And this is what this is just typical of the stupidity we're seeing out of the White House. Trump orders this massive declassification because he hears people telling him, oh, yeah, there was a lot of bad faith and bullshit and deep state and God knows whatever nonsense they use. Declassify all this stuff and it'll all come out and you can say it's about transparency and everything. Says, okay, I'm going to declassify this FISA stuff, these texts from Comey and Strzok and McCabe and everything. And then Mark Warner, who's my U.S. senator, says, you know, I've looked at a lot of these documents and really they just show what all the evidence was that led to the FISA warrant in the first place. And they showed that, yeah, there's real reason to believe that Carter Page was approached by the Russians about being a spy.
Wait, was that in question?
No.
Like, we all knew that Carter Page was a spy.
And then Trump suddenly turns around like a day or two later and goes, well, I'm putting the brakes on all this because my Department of Justice, which I have tweeted against every single day for the last year and a half, is telling me that it could compromise some things. So I'm going to put the brakes on this and we're going to wait and see which documents I should release and which ones aren't. It was another self-own where he thought he was going to release all this stuff that would make him look good. And then somebody said, actually, Mr. President, this will make you look really bad. Oh, well, no, then don't release any of it. And I'll find some excuse for it to do it later.
No, that's not what happened. No. He got calls from foreign leaders who said, hey, there's stuff about our version of the CIA in those documents that we don't want made public. Don't do this, Mr. President. You will be hurting international security. And
since when does he care about that?
Well, he didn't care about it until they started calling him personally and telling him what was in those documents that they didn't want released. And then, of course, Mattis and probably Kelly turned to him and said, you know, they're right, Mr. President. You really shouldn't do this. And he buckled.
Mattis, maybe. I'm not sure about Kelly.
And
he
probably
would listen to Kelly. He wouldn't listen to
the
Mattis.
The CIA and Pompeo, they probably were all telling him, we know why you want to do this, but for international national security reasons, you can't do this.
I can believe Trump listening to Pompeo because he trusts Pompeo. I cannot believe Trump listening to Angela Merkel or Justin Trudeau or even Emmanuel Macron and deciding, oh yeah, I'm going to do what they want. No.
What about Bibi Netanyahu?
He might listen to Netanyahu.
Yeah, well, considering he already threw
If Ivanka out. Told him to listen to Netanyahu, he'd listen to Netanyahu.
He would definitely listen to Netanyahu, without a doubt.
Well, you know who he doesn't listen to? Anybody who's against tariffs. So, DJ, I'm giving you 1 minute. Give us the week with Trump in tariffs.
Yeah, he actually went through and imposed a tariff on $200 billion of Chinese imports. 10% now, it'll be up to 25% later. They actually said, oh, well, it's going to be spread over so many products that people aren't going to notice the price rise. Idiot, that's what 10% means. It means everything goes up 10%. It is something Americans are going to feel. That's why they're going to delay it. There's so much stupid here. They think corporations can reorganize their entire supply chain in 3 months. They can't. They think that the rest of the world will be happy if we have a trade war with China. They don't. because it's just a unilateral nonsense. I mean, when you get to the point where we have to rely on the Japanese trade ministry, which is using its bilateral trade talks with us to try to convince us to get back into TPP, when I have to rely on Tokyo to trick us into acting in our best interests, something is very wrong.
I turned on BBC NewsHour for about, I don't know, 35 seconds the other day as I was pulling into the gym. And there was someone, and I don't know who it was, he says, well, you know, the problem is we none of us are absolutely sure what the U.S. is trying to accomplish other than political motives with these tariffs. And I'm like, that's it. We don't know what the fuck Trump is trying to do with this other than, like, chalk up wins in some bizarre column that he's keeping.
See, every time I turn on the BBC and they're talking about these tariffs, it's just two British guys pounding the desk, laughing, going, bah!
No, I think this was actually from someone from Asia, you know, saying that they
oh, yeah, it's the
they
same
couldn't
thing.
Give in because they don't know what they're giving into. It was, right, it was right. Really
they're laughing
startling.
Too. They're laughing too.
Yeah, they're actually seem they're frustrated. They don't want to pay more for iPhones either.
And just like DJ said, every time I have a conversation with a conservative, which is probably more than I care to, about the tariffs, I go, well, let's they say,
be nice to your brother, Greg.
No, my brother's not a conservative, truly. And it's they'll say, well, the tariffs went up. Isn't that awesome? And I go, in what way? They go, well, now they're paying an extra 10%. I said, we're paying an extra 10%. Who do you think's going? This is coming down on? Did you not understand how this works? And they go, no, their government is now paying an extra 25%. And I go, I don't think that's how that works. And they go, Oh, you poor liberals. If only you understood economics and business. And I was like, I think that will come down and get passed down to us. Some sort of trickling down or pissing down economics. and they're like, oh, you make up stuff all the time. And I go, yeah, okay, you're right. Sorry.
No. Well, let me ask this. Nassim, you've sat patiently listening to us babble for about 40 minutes here. Have we turned you off to Democratic politics?
No, definitely not. This has been really interesting.
Have we turned you on to cheap red wine or whatever DJ's drinking tonight? That's what much of this is brought to you by.
No, this is, to be honest, it's been very reassuring and you know, it's always great to hear. I actually thought, you know, when I looked up the team, I was telling Kevin this, there was some conservative backgrounds. I thought I'd be throwing some curveballs maybe today, but no.
No, it turns out intelligence and facts has a liberal bias.
So to sum it all up, we all have to get out to vote. And one of the ways we can help get out the vote is by going to
Outvote, www.outvote.com.
And get your friends to vote, put pressure on them, use guilt, use Jewish guilt, use mother's guilt, use any guilt you can. Get your friends to turn out for the midterms. And then in 2020, we're going to do it again with even more people because we're going to build up a massive database. And Nassim and his team are going to refine that app. And hopefully we'll be able to end this nightmare before it goes another 4 years. So with that, I want to say thank you to everybody for listening. Please don't forget to check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast, and check out our website, www.moreperfectunionpodcast.com, where you can also find commentary that we write between shows. And if you like to debate and would like to debate politics with us between shows, please come to our Facebook debate group, Open Fire. We're all there, and we'd love to see you there, too. And we're going to end on this, everybody. You probably heard that Ben and Jerry is doing their part for the Democratic cause by issuing some Democratic-themed ice cream flavors this week. And I'm wondering, does anybody have any names to suggest?
Yeah, I've got a bunch, actually. Well, the obvious one, of course, is like Blueberry Wave. That's the obvious one. If we want to go old school, we could go like, this one's kind of gross, but I don't know, it depends how you take it. We could go like Clinton Custard.
Oh, God.
Oh, ew. No. I'm not drinking that. I'm not eating that.